It's Wednesday, which means it's Big News Wednesday with JR Jackson. JR, how's it going?
What's
big
up?
Election, you know, wrap up Wednesday.
This is the thing, it's kind of baked in. You know, we get the elections on Tuesdays. It's kind of it kind of hands it on a silver platter for me to get a Wednesday where we get to respond to these things, number one. Mm-hmm. And number two, I don't mean to be a prima donna, but can we get like a trap beat on that JR Wednesday's intro?
You would like to suggest, I'm sure we can make some modifications. I will say, as we launch in this Big News Wednesday, it is admittedly a little bit arrogant of you and I to show our faces on the news when progressives like us are the cause of so much suffering politically. Anyway, we'll be talking about that later on.
We have no shame. I know.
We should feel shame because we did it. We did it, and we did it intentionally, and apparently we'll never learn. So, oh well. And oh my God, I see in the audience right now, there's other progressives who don't seem to understand that they should be ashamed with their head busted into the ground. Anyway, don't worry, we'll get to that later on. It is a Big News Wednesday and we've got way too much. So in just a little bit, we're gonna be giving you some of the election results. And we have searched far and wide for good election results and we actually found a few. So that'll be fun. And then later on, we'll get into the media narrative about progressives. And what do you know? Donald Trump declares victory. Nobody could have seen that coming. We've got the worst candy to hand out on Halloween. We got the teacher of the year. There's a lot of crazy nonsense. Did they find JFK Jr. yesterday? We're gonna update you on that. And along the way, if you wouldn't mind hitting the like button, sharing the stream, that would be great. With all that said, JR, anything we need to address before we jump into this thing?
No, I had some concerns, but I think you covered them all.
Thank you. Okay. Now I wonder what the concerns were. Okay, well, with that, why don't we jump into this thing?
Phone and throw it about as far as I can.
It's assault.
Sir, we're all here to exercise our democratic.
No, you're here to vote us into communism. Wannabe.
So that was how Election Day started for some in Virginia. A guy running up on a car and then, yeah. Oh, those were bleeps, so you don't know what he said. I don't recall the first one, but the second one started with N. And I think you can fill in the gap. So it was that sort of Election Day. This is, after all, America. So what do you know? The election went poorly for reasons we will jump into. There were a number of high profile losses for Democrats, both of the progressive as well as the corporate variety. So that's always fun. In Virginia, the single largest election, we've been previewing it recently. Glenn Youngkin ended up winning narrowly over Terry McAuliffe. These aren't the final results, we'll see, but it's over. It's 50.7 to 48.6. And we want to give you just a little bit more information about Youngkin because most people don't know anything about him or what he stands for. And I include 100% of the people that voted for him in Virginia in that. So he has a personal fortune estimated by Forbes at $440 million. So you know he's got your back. You know he's gonna worry about what happens to your family. Anyway, he contributed $20 million to his own bid. Here's a fun little game for you. Work out what percentage of your savings that would equate to. For him, it's just play money. It's a goof. $20 million, who cares? I made that last week. Anyway, with that, he paid for top tier GOP consultants and an avalanche of TV ads and prompted speculation that his sights were set beyond Virginia, where governors must step down after a single term. And why not? In America, we expect that people get elected not caring at all about their constituents or the seat they'll be filling. It's always just something more. And maybe after decades of work, they can become president, their lifelong ambition, and then they can do absolutely nothing there too. It's a fun system that we've got set up. Anyway, one more fact about him, because remember, right-wing populism, economic anxiety, they want a true champion for their economic concerns. He worked for McKinsey and Company, so I don't know, maybe him and Buttigieg can hang out sometime. A corporate consulting giant. In 1995, he joined the Carlyle Group, a private equity firm. Based in Washington, the firm has deep establishment ties, including to the military and energy industries. and it served as a soft landing for former government officials to build fortunes. I'm sure he'll end up there someday again. So McKinsey, he's a massive multi-millionaire. He worked for the Carlyle Group, ties to the establishment. So consider the swamp drained, America. Great job, right wingies. Anyway, JR, what do you think?
I'm not sure if there's much surprise. Is there really? I mean, this is the way it was going. We saw the shift in the polls and things were changing and people were nervous and all, maybe to still eke it out. And really the main talk about anything that had to do with this race had nothing to do with this race. I mean, that's just from what I've seen and what I saw. And maybe that was different in Virginia. Maybe that's different from where people were actually voting here. Because of course there was other races that day, which we'll get into. But this was the big one, right? This was the big one. And we were talking about Joe Manchin, Joe Manchin, Kyrsten Sinema, Joe Biden going overseas. We need to get this part done. Oh, look what the squad's doing. Look what the progressives are doing versus these guys. And look how it's gonna hurt everyone. And then the only thing that was talked about with this race was how Donald Trump wasn't necessarily gonna go. Or maybe he was gonna go and then wasn't gonna go. Donald Trump's energy has been around surrounding himself and about pushing things for his potential run in 2024 and how he's gonna influence this to a degree. It was all kind of like on the outskirts of the actual arguments that were happening. So when people went to vote, I just wonder what their motivations were.
They have no idea.
Was it something locally? No, was it something more expansive? Because we always have these assumptions about whether or not it was local or more nationally. And who's really to say? But I saw it as more of a national look, and they weren't really voting for these two guys. But
yeah, and look, one of the things that we're told you're not supposed to say this mattered, but it sure seems like time-wise it mattered. Was critical race theory. It's the silver lining in this. Sure, you know, it sucks that a Republican won, but at least now they still won't teach CRT in their schools. But anyway, whether that mattered or not to voters. You know who it definitely seemed to matter to? Youngkin, because that's what he was talking about in his stump speech, was the scourge of CRT, which doesn't exist. So who knows? And look, if you're a Republican and you're watching this, I'm sure that this feels great. You know what? And I don't even begrudge that. You guys have had a rough year of denying reality and stuff like that. It feels good to win once again. But I'm gonna pee in your Cheerios just a little bit, and that is that he's not going to do literally anything for you. And it's important that you know that, whether you accept it or not. You elected a guy who was lying to you about what was happening in the state to do something that doesn't need to be done because the problem doesn't exist. If you expect that that guy is then gonna be a champion for your interests in office, I've got a couple years worth of lessons coming to you, and so does Glenn Youngkin. So anyway, you know, enjoy your win, but he's just there to protect other people with a net worth of $440 million or more. That's what he's there for. That's what he's going to do.
Just a general question to people who I know we have a lot to get to, but for people who like to talk about the issues with elections and who last won and how this is a Democratic seat, that's a Republican seat all the time. And I said, you know, no Republicans won the statewide in Virginia since in 12 years or something like that. So
yeah.
What does that mean? Like, I always see this when it comes to sports. They'll be like, oh, the Atlanta Braves haven't won since 1995. News, Atlanta Braves just won the World Series last night. Okay, right?
Yeah.
Haven't won since 1995. So in the meantime, as we go through every year of, say, baseball, what difference does it make that they haven't won since 1995? The people that were on the team in 1995 and the scenarios and situations, sometimes rules of the game are just different. And so now, it doesn't connect. So when they say no Republicans won statewide in a dozen years, okay, what kind of country are we now? What are we basing this off of? What are we discussing? Who's president?
Who are the candidates?
Yeah, who are the candidates? Where were they before? What did they say? What did they do? This has nothing to do with what happened in a dozen years ago. It has to do with what happened in this campaign. And if we continue to talk about how what happened a dozen years ago, we're going to continue to miss what happened in this election.
100%. Well, there were other elections, so we were hoping to have a definitive thing for you on this. But for the New Jersey governor's race, it is very close with Democrat Murphy against, I'm gonna say, Chattarelli. Don't know, don't especially care. Anyway, it's super close. It's within 0.3%. I saw some people this morning claiming that Murphy was in fact the winner. And I don't know, you know what, and I don't especially care. But we're hopefully gonna find out at some point. Anyway, that would at least break a little bit of the like, no, everyone lose your mind fights over what happened. They'll still do it because it's convenient to attack progressives with, but it'll make it a little bit more ridiculous. More importantly, though, was another loss, and that was in tragically Buffalo in New York, with 96% of precincts reporting their results from Tuesday's voting, along with nearly all early voting. Buffalo's India Walton had 40.9% of the vote, but that meant 59.04% of the votes were write-ins, most of which are likely for Mayor Byron Brown, who waged a fierce write-in campaign. India Walton says every vote needs to be counted. Right now it's Walton against write-in, whoever that is. So I think who writes in is remains to be seen. But at this point, it certainly looks like India Walton, despite winning the Democratic primary and then going on to have effectively no institutional support whatsoever from the Democratic Party, which allowed the incumbent mayor to launch a write-in campaign that was assisted primarily by corporate Dems, as well as basically the entire Republican establishment in that area, then defeated their candidate. And I want you to remember that when they talk about unity and, you know, support, like coming together and everything. So it doesn't look like India Walton is going to win.
Well, and also he didn't participate much in all that, all the previous levels of this election, right? So if you just skip out on things that are happening, say, oh yeah, you know, I'm just gonna write him because I have enough of a name recognition after people have actually voted for who they wanted. And let's make sure that I coalesce around this money backing level to come at things. This is where then, as we see these blame games go for who's at fault for what happened in each election, we're gonna ignore these types of things. So the people who voted for India Walton, so what do we think about them? What does Byron Brown think about them? What does the establishment of the Democratic Party think about their vote? What are the voters, most importantly, that voted for India Brown in that primary and said, this is who we want because her policies match up with what we want? What do they think about what the Democratic Party here thinks about their vote? And do you think those people will now trust them in the future to be like, oh yeah, you know, anybody I vote for is who's gonna be the party's nominee? No. If you don't trust your voters, why would the voters trust you? You don't trust them all. You call them pieces of garbage and they don't really know what they're doing. And actually the real Democratic voters came out for you here. Okay, continue to find out, because we found out in other races just how many Democratic voters will come out for you when you thumb your nose at them.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, one of the other non-candidate specific, I'm seeing breaking news. Louis Belmont show says Mayor Eric Garcetti tested positive for COVID-19. Bad news for Garcetti, a little bit of good news today for Anna Kasparian. Okay, so back to this. Anyway, one of the few non-candidate specific, thank you for the breaking news, by the way, Louis. Non-candidate specific updates is that Minneapolis has rejected the policing overhaul that would have effectively replaced much of the function of police with non-police services. There would still be police. It's complicated. Anyway, it's not going to happen. And why not? Despite, you know, all of the good that it could do, it's a big change. You know, Americans are in some cases resistant to change because they've been made terrified of anything good ever happening. And there's, you know, like think about the media coverage of those sorts of issues, anything having to do with criminal justice. Like it's, the deck is obviously stacked. So, you know, good job. There were a number of, you know, politicians, Ilhan Omar and, you know, all that who supported it, but it didn't end up happening in the end.
Yeah, it's a gauge of where, you know, at least this particular state is on these types of issues. They haven't figured it out yet. They still haven't seen it. And, the fight continues. So, yeah, maybe other versions of this type of proposals can come into fruition, but I'm sure they're hoping this won't get attempted again. But obviously, as negative policing continues to happen, people aren't just gonna continue to sit by and be like, oh, well, Minneapolis said no, so I guess we'll continue to let these guys run rampant. It's just, it's not sustainable.
Yeah, 100%. Well, we got to move on. We got some good news. There's so much to get to today. So let's go to a little bit of the good news. I know you probably woke up this morning hearing that everything is bad always, and especially it's bad for progressives. I mean, after all, moderates lost, so why shouldn't it be progressives' fault? But in fact, actually, there were some good election results, and even good election results for progressives, or for policies that pursue progressive goals that reflect progressive values. So we're gonna throw a bunch of the good news at you. It's not necessarily as high profile as Youngkin versus McAuliffe or whatever, but I wanna start off with Ed Gainey. Pittsburgh having elected its first black mayor on Tuesday. Gainey's a former state representative who was born and raised in Pittsburgh. beat retired Pittsburgh police officer Tony Moreno. No Republican has held the office of mayor in 90 years. Jeez. Anyway, Gainey is focused on demilitarizing. But that goes to what you were saying before, JR. So what?
Exactly.
Well, okay, we'll get to that. Anyway, Gainey's focused on it's an interesting factoid, buddy. Anyway, Gainey is focused on demilitarizing the police and overhauling the police system. So hey, maybe it'll work where it's in Minneapolis. He supports reducing Pittsburgh's carbon footprint and communities of color being disproportionately affected by climate change and pollution, wants to do something about that. So that's good news. You also have Justin Bibb winning Cleveland's mayoral election over Kevin Kelly, a 34-year-old nonprofit leader. That certainly stands out. Got more than 62% of the vote, which is great. Was endorsed by Nina Turner. So that's awesome. So that's a few good candidates. We also have, by the way, Michelle Wu winning in Boston, the first woman, the first person of color to be elected Boston's mayor. If you're from outside of the US, you may not know what Boston is like. It has a reputation. I will just say that it has produced a lot of actors who have reinforced that reputation. But they elected Michelle Wu, a progressive who supports the city level Green New Deal, workers' rights, and affordable housing, which is all good news. Beat Democratic City Councilor Anissa Asabi, George, a fellow self-described first generation Arab Polish American. So there was going to be more representation for Boston than no matter what. They went with the progressive, so that's good news.
Yeah, okay, a lot of these policies we're seeing from these candidates that won that had, you know, I guess the best you can call is not as, I guess, active races or popular races in the media. We haven't heard about these as they're coming, but look, some of these policies that they have here. And you know what kind of sucks? Because as I went through some of the things that they were advocating and campaigned on, my first thought was, oh, I like that. My second thought was, but are they gonna do it? And I just wonder to what degree, and that's a normal political thought process, but I just wonder to what degree many people that are observing what's happening, again, on the federal level, with Biden and his agenda and what's going on in the House and the Senate and everything like that, how much will they fight once they're in office to do what they said they're gonna do? Because these are transformative issues and policies and things that American people want, but then they kind of lose their gumption when they get there. So it all remains to be seen. When Biden came in, it was remains to be seen, time to fight, now let's push him. And the pushing happened, but there's the most powerful man in the country, Joe Manchin, came in and stopped it all. So who's the Joe Manchin of Justin Bibb? And who's the Joe Manchin of Michelle Wu? Hopefully no one, or hopefully not even anyone else that's gonna be on the other side of the aisle, but we'll see. This is what sucks about victories, is then you go, yeah, we had these victories. We just saw them a year ago.
Yeah.
Now what?
Now what's gonna happen? Yeah, you're right. You can't just assume that because they say the right thing during the election, that you can trust them unless they wear wigs and Uggs, and then you shouldn't ever check. They'll be good, I'm not worried about it. Anyway, there were other good results as well. So Rueda Abdelaziz on Twitter has a tweet sort of summarizing some of the historic Muslim American wins, including candidates for New York City Council, first Muslim woman, Shahana from BK, first Arab American and Muslim mayor of Dearborn, Michigan, first Muslim elected to the Boston City Council, first Muslim elected to the Worcester City Council. So, you know, a lot of that clustered on the East Coast, but hey, that's good. And again, you still have to see what candidates are going to do once they're politicians. But in addition, Tucson, which happens to be Kyrsten Sinema's hometown, approved a $15 an hour minimum wage by a nearly 2-to-1 margin. Hey, yeah, $15 an hour minimum wage, woo! Isn't it fun? I hope they all did that as they went to vote yesterday. What do you know? It's popular. And it's wouldn't really it be weird. Great if they had representatives who actually supported what they support?
And how much is this going to be talked about? How much is this going to be talked about? Because then every time you have Democrats that talk about, oh, it's not what the American people want, Joe Manchin keeps talking about, my West Virginians don't want to live paid? What are you talking about? So as you see the reality of voters' actual positions and stances and what they vote on, is this going to be highlighted every time we bring up a Kyrsten Sinema now? Kyrsten Sinema rejected by her constituents because she doesn't want them to get paid what they're worth. Kyrsten Sinema doesn't think her constituents deserve to be paid. Her constituents disagree. That's what the headline should say. Kyrsten Sinema, you don't deserve it. Her constituents, yes, we do.
Yeah,
it's 100%. A fight.
Yeah. Anyway, again, like theoretically, were she to support at the state level, she would be even more popular. But again, she's already popular with the people she cares to be popular with. So that's fun. Anyway, we do have one other. So an awesome viewer of the pre-show, by the way, if you don't watch the pre-show, it takes place about 45 minutes before the show each day over at YouTube. We go live. You can sign up for notifications and all that. Let me know about one additional thing that happened. New York Proposal 2, the Environmental Rights Amendment. It was adding a right to clean water, clean air, and a healthful environment to the New York Constitution's Bill of Rights. I looked up the numbers. It was more than 60%. So that's good news. Look at that. These are actually popular things to push for. Maybe you could push for these things and you'd win more elections. That's a radical strategy for you.
Radical.
Anyway, so look, this is just not to say this is not all of this is not all of what happened, obviously. And it's very easy, and I understand why you might focus on things like the Virginia's governor's race or even India Walton losing in Buffalo. Those are unfortunate losses, certainly, especially India Walton, who came on our show and we had a great talk with her. But it was somewhat of a mixed bag. There were some good things that were done. And these changes, including, for instance, the $15 an hour minimum wage, is going to have a material impact on the lives of many people. And let's not forget that.
The actual reason for elections. That's what's so crazy. Mm-hmm. The actual reason for elections. So how is it changing Americans' lives? How is it helping Americans' lives rather than, oh, which party and what is this going to say for the future? And are they going to win? This isn't a football game. What is the results of these results of elections? You know, if the Rams beat the Chargers, it doesn't matter further than the fans and the players. Like, what?
Yeah.
Let's go to what
if the Rams
does.
Haven't beaten the Chargers in like 22 years? Anyway. Okay, everybody. So that's the results. But now we get into the consequences, the lessons that will be learned, or more likely not learned. We'll have that for you after this. Okay, every once in a while, you need a good blood boil. Prepare for blood to boil as we talk about this. The media has thoughts about who's to blame for moderate candidates losing in a time where a moderate Democratic president has had agenda being blocked by other moderate candidates. Obviously, it's the progressives, you dummy. But anyway, it's not just a vague thing. Very specific claims were made, and we're going to run through a few of them, including some of what Jake Tapper had to say last night as the election results were coming in. Here's the first.
So one of the things that I'm hearing from moderate Democratic lawmakers this evening, who are obviously panicked, not the least of which reason is they're the ones who are most likely to feel the effects if this anti-democratic, capital D democratic wind continues to blow next year. One of the things I'm hearing is that their voters, and don't shoot the messenger, I'm passing on what I'm hearing from somebody talking about what their voters feel. Their voters feel looked down upon. And I'm not talking about Republican voters looking down, feeling that they're being looked down upon. I'm talking about moderate to conservative Democrats feeling that they're looked down upon by pundits, by progressives, by other people who say that who if they express a feeling that maybe the schools should open, even if the teachers don't want them to, maybe teachers should listen to parents more often when it comes to what they're hearing. This is from a Virginian. Maybe Joe Manchin has a point when he says $1.5 trillion or $1.7 trillion is a lot of money. Let's take our time with it. Let's not rush it. They think that makes sense to me, and they don't want to be insulted by progressives called whatever names for that.
Yeah.
Chair, I think you should start.
Okay. This is the question, though. Because I've brought this up before, and I'm not mad at Jake Tapper there for bringing up that point of view. Because maybe he's one of those people, because those are his circle of friends. But who cares if it's whether or not it's him or not? Do we believe those people exist in large numbers? Those moderate Democrats who are saying, you know, maybe Manchin does have a point. Hey, you know, 1.75 is a lot of money. Or hey, maybe we should listen to what these guys, all the stuff he just listed. How much do you believe, John Adarola, that those people exist in large enough numbers that they need to be considered? And man, I'm putting on the spot. I can answer it
that
first.
Say the things he said.
Yes.
Well, first of all, he lumped a lot of things in there. There are probably some that were frustrated with the schools. I get that. The thing about Manchin and all that, that's stupid. That's really, really stupid. But go on.
Yeah, no, so that's, I'm glad you said it that way. Because we got to separate from what's stupid versus whether or not they're there. Because they are there. I believe there's a significant number of Democratic voters who think just like what Jake Tapper was saying. I don't think he would have said that if not. And they still have an influence enough in the party. Yes, as we go into people who are going to be blaming progressives for these losses, or the loss, the big one that anyone's thinking about, there comes a point where you have to figure out how do you get the people that are worth talking to convinced of the reality. Because they're missing the reality. And I think they're sincere, but they're missing the reality. There's a difference between moderate Democrats that are missing the reality of the situation versus Republicans who know the reality of the situation, but they just don't care. And they're looking to score some kind of a point about progressing racism in their schools because that's what they like. So those are two different groups. But the problem is the people who don't see the reality are assisting the people who are actively trying to destroy things like that, or actively trying to suppress information or knowledge or realization about our history, right? All that is lumped together. So you have to find the right people to talk to. Yeah. And I think there's a discussion worth having with those people.
I think that that's fine. I would like to engage with some of that actually. So there, Jake Tapper said, don't shoot the messenger. I won't, but I will mock him because that was some stupid BS that I just heard from him. So what he said is these moderate voters are being offended by progressives. The progressives are putting up bills for $1.7 trillion and that offends them. Yes, I'm sure that America is full. Virginia is full of people who are like, wait, you wanna cover my dental care? Get away from me. Why would you say that to me? My hearing, you want me to hear? These are offensive things. Stop it, please. Nobody is saying that. Nobody's saying that. And by the way, even if you thought that, how does that actually work as an analysis of the election we just had? Because you didn't have a progressive lose in Virginia. You had one of the moderates that you want. I just tweeted out, let's get the challenge going for Jake Tapper to define what the hell a moderate actually is. They got their moderate and they haven't passed the bill. That's what he says he wants. Don't let the progressives take over. Don't pass these bills, slow it down. It hasn't happened. They haven't passed it and you got your moderate. So how is the solution to a moderate campaigning on nothing being done? How is the solution? Well, we need more moderates and we need less to be done. In fact, we need less to even be proposed because it seems a bit presumptuous of you to imply that the government should ever help anyone. But this is what he's going to say because Jake Tapper is Terry McAuliffe. They occupy slightly different roles in this whole system, but it is the same at the end of the day. The goal is the same. Terry McAuliffe gets elected to stop anything from happening as governor of Virginia. Jake Tapper hosts the news to stop anything from happening as a member of the media. Both of them are whatever moderate is supposed to mean, they both are that thing, and they are very much in lockstep. So what do you know? Shocking that after moderates lose, it's progressives' fault. That's what Jake Tapper has to say there. And I like the commitment to this message, because what you wouldn't want to do in CNN's night-long blame the progressives game is, oh, I don't know, have a progressive on. You wouldn't want to do that. That would just muddy the waters and really, it would take away the clarity of the message there. But we do have more. We have more coming from Jake Tapper. So let's play this.
This is a bad night for Democrats, and they control everything. It is, I don't know if it's a rejection of the Democratic Party or the party moving too much to the left or the party not delivering on, yeah, on progressivism. That's for the Democrats to work out, but it is a rejection.
Yeah,
I mean, how am I supposed to know? This is only my entire job is to opine on these things. Maybe it's that they moved too left. Maybe it's that they didn't do anything. I'll weigh both of those things equally. Maybe it's that people are terrified that the government's actually trying to help them. Maybe it's that Biden campaigned on things. We put them in office and they haven't done any of those things. Who's to say what would be frustrating voters? What an abdication of the minimal responsibility that he's been given to analyze things. And I want to add, feel free to jump in. I'll have one more point about Jake Tapper before we move on to Van Jones.
No, but
what do you think about that?
Because it's easy to do it this way. It's easy to say the way we've always said it. If This is what I think a lot of times we have to break down. No matter what your job is, this is my belief system. No matter what people's job is, eventually, majority of people, they eventually fall into this routine and repetition of what they do. News anchors like Dick Tapper don't have to think critically about the next steps for these things. They've been in the mix so long that this is just the way things are. Cenk says this type of things all the time. There's this bubble, and once you've lived in the bubble this long and it's worked for you like this, what else is there? This is reality. People's only reality is what they've lived. So he's thinking, oh my God, progressives are pieces of garbage. That's what we've always said. So it's obvious that they're still pieces of garbage now, and the people who vote for them, they don't really exist, right? There's a separation from who the people are that want the things, and it's been invented, versus the people who don't want those things. In reality, they are in such smaller numbers. But no, someone needs to dig a little deeper just to point these types of things out. But who's to do that?
are they gonna go further? Not people who paid millions of dollars to do that, certainly.
Because they're comfortable and they're in a routine. They have to change up their approach and who they're speaking to. As you said, where was the progressive on the panel last night? Not that they excluded progressives. They don't think they really exist. They think they're just there to yell.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't just Jake Tapper. Van Jones also had thoughts on the elections last night. He is the closest thing that these panels will have to a progressive, and yet he agrees with them on basically everything. Anyway, here is some of Van Jones' commentary.
This is a big deal. These numbers are bad. This is not some. These are our voters. These are voters that came to us in 2018, came to us in 2020, and have abandoned us in droves in two states that should be in our call. That's a big deal. That is a five alarm fire. And I think that, look, I hope we can pass these big bills. Bill Clinton was able to turn his ship around and survive after the shellacking in 94 by doing a lot of small stuff that just lets you know he was on your side. He was talking about school uniforms. He was talking about V-chips for kids. He was talking about all kinds. But you know what? For ordinary folks, that guy cares about me. That guy understands what I'm going through. If this party doesn't wake up tomorrow morning and figure out how can we run back to regular folks and regular folks' issues. Now, some stuff we've been talking about is good stuff. Helping grandmas, helping kids, but it's been buried, it's been lost in this cold, baked DC conversation about trillions of dollars.
Okay, I'm gonna try to be brief because we're running out of time, unfortunately. So they were elected in 2020. Biden actually won, and the Senate was given the Democrats. Why was that done? So that they could say, hey, we're gonna talk a little bit about school uniforms. Is that why we think that they were put in office? Maybe it was for the promises that they made. Maybe it was a repudiation of what the Republicans had been doing, which is nothing that helps regular people. But we've totally forgot about that. We're not gonna think about it. And we're gonna toss up the possibility, well, you know, I hope that they get the big bills done, but he should really triangulate around these incredibly minor things. No one on that panel is talking at all about how wildly popular the components of the Build Back Better bill actually are. They are trying to figure out, racking their brains, how is it that McAuliffe didn't win? Why would there be a strike back against the Democrats when nothing has been done, and there are all these popular things that they said they'd do, we want them to do them, they're not doing those things. I have no idea. Maybe it's more triangulation. Maybe he should play the saxophone on Montel Williams. I don't know. What are you talking about? And by the way, again, Van Jones, who is the most progressive of all of them, at the end of the day, the progressive part of him is, I hope they do it. But his lesson is, do small things. It is, at the end of the day, fairly indistinguishable from Jake Tapper, which is do not dream big, don't make any more promises, don't fulfill the promises that you've actually made, do incredibly small amounts of stuff like you've been doing this year, and somehow you'll win, whereas you just lost with the strategy that I'm now articulating.
Well, that's the point. No, this is
it was Arsenio Hall. It wasn't Montel Williams. I apologize. It was like 30 years ago.
It was more fun than it was Montel Williams. I knew.
Sorry.
I'd rather go with Montel. Anyways, so this is an illustration from Van Jones's point of view. This is an illustration of the Democratic approach to appealing to voters. It's not to do anything for them. It's to do little things that don't mean anything that look like you're doing something for them.
Yeah.
They keep saying it out loud. And it's the worst strategy. Now, maybe us idiot progressive pundits over here will say, hey, you know, they're ignoring actual things that American people want and they're giving us nothing. And then, you know, it kind of gets heard by a few people, but the folks doing it don't realize how damning of an argument that is. You know what we gotta do? We gotta do some things like Bill Clinton starts talking about school uniforms. What does that do for people who can't afford to make sure that their kids in those school uniforms eat while they're there? Like, these are the actual issues with America, and sweeping changes are just way too radical. But Republicans have no problem doing huge sweeping changes that actually people don't want. We have problems doing sweeping changes that people do want. And it's just, it's the party of doing as little as possible to stay in power. And also, by the way, the mischaracterization that the Senate was given to Democrats. Oh my God, the House was given to Democrats. Oh my God, and the president is given to Democrats. Point out why that Senate isn't doing anything for Democrats. Point it out. If it's been given to us, why hasn't it been fulfilled? What are those two main reasons that you won't utter?
100%. Yeah. It's just, look, they're not interested in producing an accurate understanding of why what happened. They're there to deliver the same one that they always do. If the Dems win, you need more moderates. If the Dems lose, you need more moderates. If the Dems win, you shouldn't do anything. You wouldn't want to overstep. If they lose, you should bounce back by not doing anything. It is always the same message. And you should be incredibly suspicious of people who always think the exact same thing is right for literally every situation and won't even try to ground that argument in the very available public polling that we have. We literally have polls that tell you what people want, and those are not a part of this conversation about trying to figure out what voters want. Doesn't that seem a little bit weird, a little bit suspicious? They could even use their own polls. CNN does polls and they won't even use those. Anyway, we are gonna have to take our second break. The hour is burning by, but one man does want to claim victory. So we'll be returning with that in just a few. Okay, let's jump into this. The election is now mostly done. We know most of the results. So what is the takeaway from Donald Trump? Was he the big winner? What do you think he thinks? Turns out in this particular case, yes, he thinks he's responsible for all the good things. But it was a position that evolved over time, in particular on the question of whether the election would be stolen. So he sent out a couple of his little statement tweets. The first one said, early indications are that MAGA voters are turning out big for Glenn Youngkin. Let's see what happens. All eyes are on Fairfax. Why the delay? Because at that point, he wasn't sure that Glenn Youngkin was going to win. So he was starting to build momentum for, well, if we don't win, it was Fairfax that did it. Then we find out that they in fact won, and he thanks his base for coming out in force and voting for Glenn Youngkin. Without you, he would not have been close to winning. I love that. Like, it's a time to congratulate a Republican for winning. And he's like, this broke mother effer wouldn't have had a chance if not for me. Anyway, in some counties, by the way, he got a higher percentage of the vote than Trump. But yeah, sure, it was just Trump. Anyway, thank you to the incredible MAGA voters, blah, blah, blah. So he's all responsible. Anyway, he goes on in his third statement to refer to himself in quotes as Trump and talking Trump. I don't even know what that's about, but the takeaway, JR, is that Glenn Youngkin doesn't matter at all. All of this was Trump, despite the fact, of course, that Glenn Youngkin wouldn't even use Trump's name, wouldn't campaign with him. The big winner of the night is Donald Trump. What do you think?
This is actually beginning to feel a little bit, to all of us that have recognized who Trump is since before he even became a politician, he's flailing a bit. And I think even maybe some Republican voters are seeing that, of course, not the quote base that he's talking about that will listen to anything he says and continue to chase down JFK Jr. in Dallas. Like, they'll continue to do that. So he doesn't matter what he says, but I feel like in a general sense, this is kind of a shot at how much someone rejected him as a Republican, openly rejected him as he ran and then yet still won. Now, I think it does actually speak more to the weakness and lack of commitment from the moderate wing of the Democratic Party. That actually, I think, determined it more. But when it comes to Donald Trump lifting someone up that didn't have any lifters, that just is pretty obvious. I think everyone knows that didn't happen because they ignored the fact that he was avoiding the state. They ignored the fact that he rejected his his advances or his hopes to come and talk. Joe Biden went there and spoke and talked, but everyone went there and spoke and he still lost. If we can say that Joe Biden is one of the reasons why this race went the way it was, we can also say that the lack of Donald Trump is one of the reasons why this race went the way it was. Now, if you believe in that narrative, you have to believe in it both ways.
Do you, if you're Donald Trump? I think if you want to be consistent, I think you're 100% right. But consistency is not one of his core values. I'll actually demonstrate it. So he's been saying for like a solid year now, the Dems steal every election, stop the steal, they steal it all. So why didn't they steal it?
Yep.
If elections are only won because of stealing, does this mean that Glenn Youngkin stole it? I mean, after all, democracy, you know, the voting system doesn't work, you can't trust it. So why didn't they steal it? Here's the thing. He's not only like just not addressing that would be bad enough. He's going to try to claim that this proves that they steal elections. Listen to this.
I don't believe that we lost it. I don't believe we lost Virginia. And I think they tried to get away with murder at Fairfax, but there were too many eyes on it to say, you know, when I ran, it was one of 50 states plus other areas. Okay. The islands, et cetera. We have places that nobody ever heard of. And you got to see what a mess this election process. No, I don't believe it. I've heard Virginia's blue and all that. I never believed it was blue. I never believed it was blue. It's something you can win. I mean, why all these people that turned out last night? Look, without MAGA, he would have lost by 15 points.
Yep.
More.
Yep.
I think more than that.
Okay, so he referenced the Fairfax thing. So the fact that a Republican won proves that Republicans should always win. And because he didn't, that proves that they stole it. Now, why didn't they steal it now? Well, he's got a foolproof defense against that. There were too many eyes. Mm-hmm. Dude, you audited every place in the country. Why weren't your eyes good enough in that case to find this deal? But this is what it is. Every election Democrats win will be stolen by virtue of the fact that a Democrat won. And any election where the Republican wins, the Democrats still tried to steal it, but like Joe was standing too close. So we failed in our steal, I guess. Yep. This isn't convincing to any serious person, but I'm sure they're gonna gobble it up.
They don't need serious people. My only quick thought, they don't need serious people. They need people that are willing to believe anything he says. You don't have to connect the dots. You don't have to have a logical thought process. Just believe what he says. This has been the narrative from the beginning. And when he says MAGA had to be there for him to win, MAGA is code word, everyone knows this, for my thoughtless supporters that no matter what I say, they'll be on board. If that's what helped you, bro, well, you can do whatever you want. And that's exactly what these types of politicians want. People that are willing to just nod their heads as you destroy their lives.
Yeah. My final point, I think that you are right about it. It seems a little bit flailing. Like this guy didn't want Trump to be a part of the race. Let's be clear about that. For all the other problems with him, he seems like a terrible guy. He didn't want Trump to be a part of the race. And look, Trump wants Republicans to win, but more than that, he wants everyone to think that he's the reason they win. He is going to want to be more involved in future races. He doesn't like being sidelined. The guy doesn't want to campaign with him. We'll see how much of that he can take going into the midterms before he starts attacking the candidates or insisting. He will literally just show up at a rally and walk very slowly and carefully up the ramp and then pick up his water with two hands and toast to their eventual success.
If this isn't an opening, sorry, I thought I had the last one. If this isn't an opening for Democrats to finally wake, you get a chance. If this isn't an opening for Democrats to wake up and finally have a chance to really push progressive policies that American people want, fine, just call them Democratic policies that American people want, as we see this forming of this collision between Donald Trump and the rest of the Republican Party that is going to happen as midterms come and as 24 comes up, they're gonna be having some infighting because Donald Trump is relentless. They're gonna be fighting of who's gonna be in which direction of the party. And as we sit back and do nothing, they get to control as they're being the saviors. If you do things, voters are gonna have something to vote for and something to vote against. And it's gonna highlight their lack of an agenda. And if you don't carry through an actual agenda that American people want, it's got two sides of a party that have no agenda except for fighting these social, these stupid wars over bathrooms and CRT. That's what it's gonna be about, and that's what they lost yesterday.
Exactly, yeah, that's not territory the Democrats will ever be able to compete on. The only chance they have is an actual agenda. And the only chance we have of getting that is choosing candidates that are freed up by their donors to be able to actually propose policies. So, okay, let's jump into our last story of the hour. The NRA is being targeted by a new lawsuit that asserts that they have been breaking federal campaign finance laws and supporting Republican candidates, including former President Donald Trump, to the tune of $35 million in illegal campaign contributions and coordination. This is coming from the gun control group Giffords that filed lawsuits against the NRA earlier this week, alleging that they contributed tens of millions of dollars to candidates both at the presidential level as well as in the Senate. And what they say happened is that they evaded federal regulations by using shell entities to coordinate advertising with seven candidates running for federal office during the 2014, 2016, and 2018 election cycles. Obviously, they had huge financial problems over the past couple of years. Maybe they didn't have the money to actually do any of this. But previously, they're saying that they did. One of those candidates was Donald Trump. Giffords accused the NRA of illegally contributing up to $25 million to Trump's first White House run. Other politicians named as having received these funds over the years include Tom Tillis, Tom Cotton, Cory Gardner, Ron Johnson, Josh Hawley, I think that's supposed to be, and Matt Rosendale. So a bunch of the names that you'd expect. And the way that they did that was they had this organization that would work with the NRA and with candidates, and effectively it changed its name based on who it happened to be working with at a particular moment. So it was known as either On Message or Starbird. It was On Message when it acted on behalf of candidates and Starbird when it acted on behalf of the NRA. But regardless of which name it had the same leadership. It was located at the same address. There was no internal separation or firewall between employees who work at the two entities. And according to the complaint, a number of employees at the consulting firms alternated between the two in time before the 2016 election. You are allowed to do basically anything when it comes to campaign finance, except blatant coordination with the campaigns. And you're honestly allowed to do quite a bit of that. They wanted to do $25 million worth of it. And honestly, this is America, JR, so they're probably gonna get away with it. But this is about as blatant coordination as we've seen since the old McConnelling fad. So we'll see if they end up getting in trouble. I'm glad that Giffords is pushing for this.
It's so crazy you said that, because I was like, we'll see. We'll see if something happens as far as responsibility of this. Because every election cycle we see where the actual election fraud, where campaign finance fraud happens, where candidates take money, or then even people, as they talk about voter fraud, as voters and as they push for voters to do illegal things, we consistently see the direction that these things are coming from. But what changes about it? What actually happens differently? NRA had its issues with money and everything, but when are their issues coming for their actual blatant disregard for the law? And where they're pushing millions, tens of millions of dollars to certain candidates for what? This is the NRA. So the NRA is supposed to be protecting your Second Amendment rights, you know, because that's the most important thing in America. We got to kill each other as fast as possible. Now, if now their illegal approach to making sure certain candidates come in to help them push that narrative and continue to convince Americans that they have to shoot each other in the face immediately, then I think that it's kind of an indictment about how bad their messaging really is and really who they're about.
Yeah.
This is protecting gun rights. This is illegal campaign contributions. This is protecting gun rights. So if you affiliate yourself with them, you're part of this illegal grouping that's trying to change things in America in a bad way. If you flip it, and some leftist group is doing this whole situation where they're pushing all this money to candidates illegally. The outcry, they hate America. Where's the hatred for America being leapt onto the NRA when they do things like this? It just doesn't come.
Yeah, and by the way, this is very similar to what we were talking about earlier. Like, why is the NRA gonna spend $25 million to get Trump in? What agenda are they pushing? Nothing, just be there and stop things from happening. Just sit, be a rock between us and any common sense regulations, no matter how popular. It doesn't matter if it's 90%, 99% popularity for certain regulations. We just want you to stop it from happening. So we'll see. Again, campaign finance laws in the US are like effectively non-existent. They're probably gonna be just fine. The NRA couldn't really use that much more financial strain after some of the problems they've had, but we'll see what happens. Anyway, we do have a lot more that's gonna be coming up after this break. If you're on Twitch or on YouTube, the members app, we will see you on the other side of this.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.